Oh,
Oh,
hi.
hi.
Oh, hi.
How are we?
Swell. How are you
What a
doing?
lovely day to be talking to you.
Is it? Did
Yes.
something happen?
Hey, you know how I know that Jesus wasn't white?
Because he was a Jew in the Middle East?
Well, that too, but the more obvious reason, he never had a podcast.
Actually, how many disciples were there? I could definitely see that podcast.
Yep.
Right. If it
So,
has like
little
a
known fact,
rotating
the
guest
Last Supper
host.
was actually a podcast roundtable.
Oh.
That's why they're all
Mm.
facing the same way. It's like the way the
There
microphones were set up. They just kind of, photoshopped the mics out.
Wait,
Makes sense.
do they have Mary Magdalene for that? Was she the like the token diversity?
Oh,
Jeez.
Come
Christ.
on.
Was she there just so it wasn't a mantle?
Well,
Good morning.
good morning.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of religious belief systems, it took me about 100 hours of playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla to finally notice that JJ's last name is one letter off from Asgard. Are you a direct descendant of the Vanir? Like, are
No, but he
you
is very Thor.
Yeah.
very
Oh.
Thor?
Sore, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You're right. That's
That
actually
was
how a lot of
weak.
people.
It was very
Yeah.
weak. I was
That
trying
was
to.
like
It,
a that was a very
no,
JJ joke.
it was a JJ joke. He's rubbing off on me and not in a good way.
What were you saying, JJ?
Oh, I was gonna say that's actually how most people associate my name is they're like, oh, like Asgard from Marvel. And I'm like, yeah,
From
it's close.
Marvel, god damn it. I fucking
Yeah.
hate Marvel for that.
Wait, so
It
you're a
works.
Disney superhero?
I'm a Disney prince, actually. That's exactly what it is. There you
Listen,
go.
anyone, do not even start on, Marvel becoming Disney. Like, that's.
Anyway, let's keep that conversation a little bit low key and maybe we can talk about something else. Get
Oh.
it? Low key? Low key? Get it? Get it?
Loki.
Yeah,
Oh,
Loki.
that was a
There
stretch.
it is. It was a stretch.
You would be Loki if we were being characters. Like, very obviously convince people to do terrible things.
Terrible,
So speaking
terrible, terrible
of
ideas.
Assassin's Creed, so there are some like Valhalla things that happen, like flashbacks, and it's pretty like I'm not up on my Norse mythology, but it seems pretty true to like the actual stories. And what I'm learning is that like they were all dicks, not just Loki.
Oh
They're
God,
all
yeah,
playing
no, they're.
tricks and doing like asshole things to each other.
Yeah, I've read. So I don't know exactly why. I just got it in my head when I was moving to Minneapolis, and there's just so much Norwegian and Viking stuff around here, not just from the football team, but like the culture of it is seemingly important. And I just decided I'm like, I'm going to use this as an excuse to learn this stuff. So I read a few books on like the Viking history, from like its verbatim history, like the prose Edda and the prose and then the poetic Edda, which are like the two only written copies of these stories. And then there's some really good versions on top of it that is are used as reference. But what it comes down to is like, yeah, it's they're all assholes for sure. They're all a bunch of dicks. There's a ton of plot holes. It's like the worst writing. It adds up that Marvel might really dig it. They don't have to fill in too many gaps because the whole idea was it was a spoken history. So it wasn't till like Christians started coming into that area and writing things down that it became started to become what it was. And there's scholars who try to pull out the Christian stuff. I'm way off on a tangent,
Wait,
but what you're saying with Valhalla is dead on. It's very accurate.
wait. But wait, so you're telling me that these stories are like what my uncle tells me over Thanksgiving, with just randomly rambling things going on and on and on?
Yeah, imagine a culture that really held it up as a moral importance to be drunk and to die in battle. Like, and then just layer culture on top of that, you get some weird and wandering shit that, sometimes Odin is the smartest person in the universe, and often he's just does the dumbest things.
So Anthony Hopkins. So Anthony Hopkins, then.
Right. Sure.
Another Marvel cut there.
He did his best. Anthony Hopkins will only ever be Hannibal Lecter in my mind. Right. And I think that is what a lot of people have felt.
So I'm going to admit something really bad right now that I've never admitted before. I get Sir Patrick Stewart and Sir Anthony Hopkins muddled in my mind sometimes.
Well, I mean, they both played wizards in Harry Potter universe.
Hopkins?
No.
God damn it. What's wrong with you?
God damn it.
It's too easy.
God,
it's like shooting monkeys in a barrel.
Australia is a weird place.
It really is.
So speaking of weird places, yesterday I had a conversation with JJ on Twitter that I thought I might need to bring up. JJ,
yes.
You made a comment about breakfast burritos in Austin, and mm-hmm. I'm, as a 10-year plus resident of Austin, I'm actually legally required to correct you and tell you that we have breakfast tacos, not breakfast burritos. And so I thought maybe, like, do we actually, like, do you know the difference between a burrito and a taco? Is this something we need to talk about?
Talk about. Well, first of all, Taco Shack has the Burnett Road burrito, which is a breakfast burrito. And Taco Shack is the most Austinite breakfast taco place in the fucking world. And I stand by that. I should see if I can find a picture of it for the thing, because it is a true breakfast burrito. Like, I actually feel my heart slow down when I'm eating it because of my arteries filling. And then the next time I'm expelling things, I am very,
you can say
very
pooping. Light. It's okay.
my British repressedness I can't say that word. But yes. So I believe the my Venn diagram of burritos, tacos, and all tacos are burritos, but not all burritos are tacos.
Yeah, no. Accurate. So that's a horrible thing.
I've never totally lived near you, and that's a dumb statement.
Yeah. So all right, so okay. There is one taco place that sells burritos, but that is not the norm. And you know, I was jokingly correcting you, but like, people get super serious about
they
that.
They really do.
They get really serious. And there's a big battle between Austin and San Antonio on who has the better tacos. And man, if you're near one of those people and you even like say the word burrito, like, they will lose their shit. So Matt, why don't you tell us the difference between a taco and a burrito? I'm going to put you on
a sandwich
here
and get you a sandwich
and get you to explain to us.
So pierogies are a burrito.
What the fuck is a pierogi?
Oh god, get out of here. Dumplings.
Actually, I really don't know.
Think about, yeah, Eastern European dumplings or burritos. Wow. What would be a taco? Oh, a hot dog is a taco.
A hot dog is a taco, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. Nailed it.
So definitely there's that. It's folded but not closed is the taco, right?
So
yeah.
A pita?
If it's wrapped, it depends, like, depends what style pita. If it's like a German style pita, it's open and it's more like a taco.
Yeah.
Where if it's like a Greek style one, it's actually more wrapped up, so it's more like a burrito. But there's a couple of things. It's both size as well as being wrapped. Because if you wrap a taco completely, it's more of a flauta than it is a burrito, right? I mean, it's not fried.
Wait, flautas are fried, aren't they?
Yeah, but that's the difference, right? So yes, a flauta is fried, but it's basically a rolled up, like, sealed taco that's then fried.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the main difference, is the size and the fact that it's open versus closed.
really glad we're fighting about all the right things.
Right.
And this not is, about well, I mean, how
is,
to.
Is that, or we can start talking about like Basecamp and whatever the fuck that, oh, like,
well, I was, that I felt like that was
that did the learning stuff that just fired half of their staff in order to prove that their financial business model works. Like, what the fuck was with that?
I don't know that story, but let's start with the first one.
All right.
Yeah. As a, as an avid Hey user and living in my inbox, as cheesy as that is, I have been a fan of those goofy guys for a while. DHH, you know, co-founder of Ruby on Rails, and Jason Fried, who I can't ever describe exactly what he does, but he's just an excellent, excellent marketer and kind of anti-VC style marketing, mm-hmm. where you can go it alone. I mean, I've read the books, I listened to the podcasts, I followed a lot of their work, and then just to watch them just yeet years of credibility that they've built up on focusing on culture to seem to have, like, yeah, a public temper tantrum is the best way I can describe it, about who has the right to disagree with people that own the business. It's just very strange. How are you two processing this?
I don't know. Like, I've never really followed the guy. I've never been super into, was it Rails he invented? Like, he, like,
yeah, Rails.
He went off the rails.
Ruby is his. Yeah.
Went off the rails.
God damn it. That was the most JJ joke. Look at this.
That was amazing. JJ, you're getting better.
This is officially our new recording time block because Paul can't keep up with JJ jokes.
Right? Amazing.
Had that one in my back pocket.
Yeah, so I haven't really followed it. And, like, I don't really care other than the fact that clearly him and his fucking co-founder are trash human beings. And I feel really bad for their employees and also the people that have to read this. I mean, they're a 50 fucking person startup. Why do they need to blog about their fucking internal culture and changes to it? Like, who gives a fuck?
I mean, but that's been their whole thing, Paul. Like, they have been open and transparent about how they run their business, and that is the reason they have a business at all. Like, them being interesting and offering somewhat subversive, like, counterculture tech startup energy is, like, why they have users for the most part. So
clearly, I haven't been following.
It's cool. I think it's in the playbook of, like, a counterculture brand, a sort of, you might call it, like, a hostile branding play, which is stuff, like, it's really fun. It's kind of like how, like, Mini used to do their car when everyone was talking about how big SUVs were getting. They had that classic, a Mini in Times Square with a fly swatter, like, right above it, because they were emphasizing how small it was. Like, that's what they've been doing in tech of, like, we're small, we charge only a single price for all users, we're not doing this bullshit scale thing that makes you a lot of money and makes you beholden to this system. So it's like, they really did burn all of their credibility around being a cultural differentiator by doing so. And to be a user of some of their stuff is like to accept them as part of your identity too. And you're just like, icky.
So maybe like, by building their identity around being a counterculture, now that tech culture is sort of swinging around to be less bro-y, they're almost forced to, like, double down on being bro-y so they continue to be counterculture. Is that, like, part of it? Like, or am I, like, ascribing too much planning and thought that to something that could be just explained with sheer incompetence?
No,
yeah, I think there's an Occam's razor at play there. Yeah.
Well, I want to give you some points there, Paul. That's actually pretty accurate from the avenue that I'm coming in from. I actually was really deep into the Rails community before going to Chef, and I got to spend a lot of time in that tech bro culture, to use your terms, Paul. And that's where I kind of cut a lot of my teeth. Because the company here in Austin that I was working at was, well, they were moving from a .NET application to a Ruby on Rails application. And no joke, they wrote the POC in a weekend because Ruby on Rails promised that. They were actually able to get it going. And then they started moving their actual customers to it like the next week because they weren't very smart. And I was one of the operations engineers trying to learn how to run this application, this brand new like framework at like, not enterprise scale, but small to medium business scale, where it was HR stuff. So it was like, there's a lot of rules we had to deal with too. So it was really challenging, but there's this matter of pride, and to play off of Broberg's counterculture idea, it was the anti-Microsoft, right? It was the like, hey, let's run this on Linux. Hey, let's actually get this thing working that we don't have to pay these licensing fees because this really crazy Dane. Yeah. DHH is.
Yeah.
He's Danish. So yeah. I mean, that just sounds like the regular, like free software, open source counterculture.
Well, I mean, it's like 2005, 2006. It wasn't, I mean, okay. Shit, that's 14 years ago.
Yeah. Also open source and free software movements have pre-existed that by about 20, 30 years at least. Depending on where you want to put the demarcation, but I guess
it's where you found and you joined that culture.
Yeah.
I guess
exactly. Yeah, it's everyone has different on ramps. The future's always been here. It's just not evenly distributed. But the thing is, like, I don't want to ascribe this to intention. When I think it's more like a sensitive ego,
right,
who started to notice that they were losing control of something they saw as mine, not yours. Like, and the yours that it's hurting is its users. Right. And secondarily, most importantly, their employees, who many of which have started Twitter threads about it, saying that they learned about this change of rules and the loss of their privileges at work from a Twitter thread, which, sure, they absolutely have the right to do, but it's like just a freaking shitty way to lead anything. So,
right.
That's an energy.
There's kind of like, maybe this is my ignorance talking, right? It's never a good way of me starting any sentence.
Great way never. To start anything.
I mean, at least you're self-aware.
Yeah, it's true. So the first step is acceptance. But in all seriousness, like, this was so, like, we have monumental breakdowns of these types of things relatively regularly. We do. Let's not be cut any, like, give me that slack, right? There's got to be someone out there who's been able to identify these and see patterns with this stuff and like been able to have like, hey, is this a bad idea kind of question or a sounding board of like, think of the optics of this going out. Like, there's got to be like a consultant or something like this, so these types of situations don't happen in such a public way.
So let me tell you about those consultants. I was loosely involved in something along those lines, where basically leadership gets consultants in to tell them, you know, what's wrong right now, what they want to do differently, and if that's going to work. And the problem is, if the consultant says anything other than that they're wanting the consultant to say, they fire the consultant and keep on doing what they were doing. Right? They're not hiring the consultant to make sure they're doing the right thing. They're hiring the consultant to give them a pat on the back and say, you're doing great.
They don't actually want to fix themselves. That's dumb.
You know, you hire in, like, the obvious one is like your change consultants. You know, you hire them in and say, you know, we need to change, and the consultants come back and say, well, you know, turns out, are you ready for it? Leadership is the problem. So you need to change leadership. And of course, the leadership are the ones that paid the money. So what are they going to do? Fire consultants.
Pay them to go away.
Right.
Oh, got man.
It. So the other interesting things I saw, and you can pick and choose what we talk about, is so Lambda School. And Matt, do you know about Lambda School?
I do.
Oh, you don't sound thrilled. So, if I remember Lambda School wrong, it's very different to Bovine University, JJ.
Yeah, damn. God.
Oh, he's back. Damn. Sorry, yeah, JJ, yeah, yeah. You've lost your claim.
Yeah. So if I remember, Matt, and I hope you know them better than I do, because I only know them in passing, they're the ones that really pioneered the, you can pay a little now, and then we'll take some of your salary once you've graduated and got a job. That's kind of the way they pay. And it's like a programming boot campy kind of thing, right?
I think about it like a life mortgage.
Right.
Like they really, it seemed like a somewhat good intention at heart design at first, where they, you could go to their Lambda school for free, but like many of these boot camps promise you're definitely going to get a job, but you weren't necessarily charged until you got a job. But once you were, it was a sliding scale based on how much you paid up front. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of economic knowledge to recognize like, oh, so you want to help allegedly less privileged people get into this space, but you are going to disproportionately add cost to them over time.
So it's like Hillsong, but without Jesus.
I don't know that reference.
It's called a racket. It's literally called a racket.
Hillsong are one of the more modern like Christian religions where they really go on that like the prosperity doctrine or whatever, and like it's all about like if you're a member you have to do your like 10% tithing, and you know, if you're a good Christian, like good things will come to you. And so that's why it's cool for the priest to be driving around in his Mercedes like E-Class.
There you go. Got you.
I need three jets, damn it.
You know,
but they're super into like the like song and dance and stuff. So they have like big, massive churches with huge productions. And
are you announcing membership to something we should be worried about, Paul?
I think we're starting to do this.
They originated in Australia, and they also did lots of fun things. Like they had a women's shelter, and which is great, right? Except for the fact they would only help women that agreed to accept Jesus Christ into their life.
Sure. Right. So I would put this under the category of structural racism. Like you're like, I'm doing a good deed in a way that disproportionately harms people that have already been disproportionately harmed by this system.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's what I know them for.
Right. So now we know who they are. So they laid off 35% of their staff yesterday. And it was that classic CEO gets up, does a big speech on how hard it is to be the CEO, and then fires a bunch of people. You know, perfect. But one of the reasons they cited was because they were right-sizing to prove that their financial model works. And I'm like, well, if you have to fire 35% of your staff to prove that your financial method works, maybe your financial model isn't what you thought it was.
It doesn't smell right.
Yeah.
It doesn't smell right.
So there was a good number of folks on Twitter giving them their just desserts the other day because, you know, as you said, they're kind of a little bit scammy, a little bit, you know, whatever. And so a lot of people were happy to see them get their just desserts.
Huh. Well,
and then on the other side of things, Kinvoke just got acquired by Microsoft. And Kinvoke is the most wonderful company.
They're rock stars. The most
wonderful people. They're not rock stars, JJ.
Yeah, they are.
They're just wonderful, excellent
people. No, I worked with them. Like when I was a chef, the people that I worked with Kinvoke specifically, they were some of the best engineers I've ever worked with.
I'm not saying they weren't great engineers. I'm saying they're not rock stars.
It sounds like a vocabulary change. Right. Let's take a step back and say, what did they do? Why were they acquired?
All right. So they basically built up this stable of incredibly smart people with like deep knowledge into like what seems like esoteric things, like super deep Linux kernel, super deep eBPF, super deep on like how, you know, like I don't know what the right term is, like the underlying way that shit works. Like if you wanted to talk about like, you know, this Swarm or whatever, they would be able to like sit down in an afternoon and like basically write out like a reference implementation of Swarm, those kinds of people. And they do a lot of contract for hire stuff. So as JJ was kind of getting to, they did a lot of work with Chef, with Habitat, They've done a lot of stuff around the Kubernetes community, containers. They basically built Flatpak images, which is Flatpak containers, which is kind of like a like Ubuntu Snap, but actually not terrible. And then they took the mantle when CoreOS, the operating system, was kind of disbanded, and basically built Flatcar Linux, which was CoreOS at the time. It was basically shut down, and basically what went on with it. And so Microsoft just yesterday or the day before announced that they had made the acquisition. And that's really exciting because, as I said, there's a lot of amazing people there. And they've got that perfect thing where, like, everybody I know that's there is both like an amazing person, amazing engineer, like just a good person, which is a pretty rare thing to have, like, everyone be that versus, you know, one or two that are like that and everyone else is kind of a, you know, that classic, you know, oh, he's kind of an asshole, but he's also really good at what he does, so we let him get away with it. Like, they don't have any of that. They just have the good ones.
What a great reputation. And, you know, congratulations. Sounds like they're, I mean, to they go to Microsoft learned, sounds great.
They actually learned what Habitat is and does and actually was able to write some Habitat. So, yeah, they're pretty effing amazing. Yeah, I used to work there. I can make that joke. Just saying. I used to work that. So, you know.
Cool. Like, literally anyone is allowed to make fun of Chef. You don't have to have worked there. Then they're not a protected class.
Anyway. So I came up with this thing.
Uh-oh.
So hang on. I do want to put this in here while I have a chance to say, as I'm trying to think of a preamble way to get to this conversation. So I recently got a push notification on my phone for Nextdoor. Yes. I don't know how it happened, but Nextdoor.
There are so many poor life choices bundled together to make that happen.
Yeah, like Nextdoor is a horrible, horrible place. And I got this push notification. I'm like, what the hell is this icon? The fuck is Nextdoor? What? First of all, why do I have this on my phone? When did this show up? And why are you telling me about Prop B here in Austin, Texas? Like, no, stop this. So, by the way, we're going to get some next on Tuesday is some big voting here in Austin. So hopefully we're going to do the right thing.
Oh, but, yeah. Matt might not know about Prop B. We should just talk about Prop B a little bit, but finish
up. Is it related to preposition, preparation H, or?
I mean, yes. It kind of is in a way.
Actually, sure it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, JJ, quickly finish off your Nextdoor thing.
I was just going to bitch about Nextdoor, but this is you're right. Prop B is actually something we should really talk about because I think it's pretty important. Socially responsible. It really is.
So Prop B, and JJ, correct me if I'm wrong.
I will.
Because I'm occasionally wrong. But Prop B is basically a proposition to basically make being homeless illegal in Austin. So, like, what's happened? What's happened is... you know, it used to be that homeless people would live in green belts and stuff and we wouldn't see them and therefore it wasn't a real problem. But the city opened up some rules to basically say, you know what, homeless people, like, set up a tent wherever you want. You're like, we don't really care. And so we got little like tent cities like under bridges of like freeways and stuff like that. And of course that's near where people live and it's visible. And so now homelessness is suddenly a big problem. And so we're going to fix that problem by making it illegal again. And so Proposition B is basically the law they're trying to bring in to make being homeless illegal. But they're doing that classic weasel wordy stuff where they're trying to make out that it's like a good thing for the homeless.
Sure.
Yeah. And like, it's like the way they've worded it, like, they're trying to convince you that, like, voting yes is the right thing to do versus voting no.
Right. Yeah, the framing effect is well at play. Yeah,
the framing effect is so well in play. And the framing effect works really well in Austin because there's so many people that want to do the right thing but don't want to put in the work. And so if you give them a yes-no question and it's a little bit hazy, they'll always just pick yes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like if you went through and just did four everything, it was a really weird decision because of the way they wrote the ballot. Also, it turns out in Texas specifically, so we also had the plastic bag thing here in Austin, where the bag band. Yeah. We had that happen. And then Greg Abbott, our governor, got a Texas law passed that allowed plastic bags all throughout the state of Texas. So our ban here in Austin was no longer valid. He's going to, like, he's threatened to do the exact same thing if we are for Prop B. No, are against Prop B, against Prop B here in Austin. He will make it illegal in the state of Texas on public property to sit, lie, or ask for money. That is the actual wording of it. So all these public property tents and places will now be able to be cleared out by Texas state troopers, not local police. And if you didn't know, in Texas, for our friends in Norway that listen to this podcast, I know I've seen you download it in Norway. Our Texas state troopers are this is not hyperbole. They are like our Marines. They are very, very like scary people. They're great people. Like, a person is great, but in the, they are militarized.
JJ, all cops are bastards. Move on.
Okay. Point being is that when it becomes a state issue, that becomes even larger for obvious reasons. So this is a really big deal for everything. But personally, to me, it's not a yes or no question, because you can't make it illegal with no other resources.
But like, it is a yes or no question, whether you like it or not. It is a yes or no question.
True, but to me, that's the reason why I struggled with it, because I'm like, no, I would want to put more money into homeless shelters and or create some infrastructure for them. But because of the way they've worded the actual law, you're not putting your money, you're not saying we need to invest more money or we need to do this thing to fix it. It's a yes or no. And as soon as that passes or doesn't pass, that becomes the law. And then all of a sudden we have people being wiped out, or not wiped out, but
it being illegal for them to live.
Exactly.
There was an obvious answer to solve homelessness. If only there was something in the name that gave you a hint on something you could do to help a person not be homeless.
And the worst part is that they tried to buy like single use or single occupancy hotels around Austin to try to mitigate part of this problem. But they obviously, again, I truly believe we do not have the smartest people in government positions, because they spent an insane amount of money for like 40 people. And like, we're talking $6 million to buy a building for 40 single occupancy. And then
the question is, follow the money.
True.
He said not the smartest. I'm like, well, maybe they're smart. They're just not optimizing for the problem that we would like them to optimize for.
But there's also the, like,
They can't
build new easily, right? It's not like they're going to build. So they have to do something. And buying existing hotels that aren't really doing much is a good start. And it's like $6 million for like, was it 40 people?
Yeah.
Like, is that, I don't know how like accurate those numbers are, if you just kind of guessed at those or if they were the actual numbers. But like, you look at the lifetime of like, you have 40 people's worth of homes, and it's probably 40 families worth of homes for the next 10 to 20 years. That's probably not that bad an investment.
Yeah.
And maybe there's more room on the property that they can add extra things.
It used to be by the old house.
Okay.
Well, it's like right over there, and it's actually just popped up because nobody was staying in it. To your point, right. It was wasted space. So yeah. The city came in and bought it. But what I'm trying to get to is, like, you're right. There's no Band-Aid to fix this.
Literally is a Band-Aid to fix it. And that is get a house for everyone that needs one. Now, it's not an easy Band-Aid, but it is it is exactly what needs to be done. And there is a lot of other stuff that goes with it. There's a lot of social services and mental health and medical services, and it's a shitload of other things that to be done as well. But there's also a lot of people and places that are trying to give that help, and the homelessness itself makes it very hard to give that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and there is a lot of research that shows that giving people a stable home away mm-hmm. from the temptation of the things that have hurt mm-hmm. them or pulled them into bad habits is the first step. So maybe we can come back to this, but we are getting to the top of the hour. We got to close a little quicker than usual. So let's do our normal roundtable on food this weekend. What are y'all up to?
I actually got requested by my wife's friends to make some bread and pizza dough for a girls' night they're having. So cute. that was really neat. Like it was like validation that I'm doing the right stuff when they're actually like, no, Genshu, would you make this for us? And I'll be like, yeah, and I'll get you a bottle of kava too to go with it. And they're like, oh,
perfect. Oh, that's so sweet. Well, on a similar note, I was asked a friend that writes for Food and Wine magazine and writes recipes online. We're going up to their family place in a month or so, and I was asked if I would smoke a pork shoulder while I'm up there.
Nice.
I'm just like, no pressure. So I am picking up some pork product and gonna be practicing for the next like every other week for the next couple weeks.
Very I was about cool. to say, if you're going in a month, you've got four practice sessions, maybe eight. If you want to push for it.
Don't want our hearts to explode at home. So I'm like already setting up, like, who am I going to feed along the way? But yeah, I need to get a couple in for sure.
Now, do you know what kind of smoking equipment they have? Are we going to have another emergency phone call because there's some weird esoteric 40-year-old electric smoker on the property?
That's a good throwback. No, I'm gonna put the portable into the PK. The portable kitchen is coming.
Oh
with
yeah,
you,
nice. It's
going in the trunk. Gonna pack nice. Up shop like it's a baby with all its gear.
Speaking of which, I have a second friend that I just finally convinced into getting a PK, and he cooked on it for the first time a couple of days ago. And
it's a cool grill. Delightful. If you're listening for grilling advice, happy to go into more details. But I'm really happy with it as a grill and an occasional offset smoker.
Paul, you have more than two friends. How'd you do that?
Sorry, buddy. We'll talk about that next time. That'll take longer.
It happens. I mean, okay, maybe Matt's more of an acquaintance than a friend.
Hey, but, you know. I thought JJ was. Rude. We talked
so,
on the phone.
Speaking of that, I've been missing, I haven't made cochinita pibil in quite a while. And so I'm thinking of getting some banana leaves and making up a batch of that. And I usually do that in the smoker. So it's sort of very much like pulled pork, just with sort of the achiote and the other delicious Mexican flavors.
Mm. Yum.
Yeah. Sounds so awesome. That's probably something I'll do in the next few days.
Good.
Oh, well, and that's the other thing is I shared with you, I think, Matt, that, you know what, we'll save it for next time. I'll make it and then we'll talk about it next time.
Perfect.
All right.
Definitely. Well, thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend. And this is The Hallway Track. Peace.
Bye. Bye.